I've asked.
Thank you very much. Can you all hear me okay? I'm teaching research at the University of Auburn, so I know my voice is not as, it doesn't project as well, so I know I was just going to make sure with the volume that you can hear me all right. And this is our beautiful Auburn campus, and hopefully springtime will come soon, and you can see all our beautiful azaleas. Page down. Okay. And today, we're talking about the plant parasitic nematodes and expanding on what Mr. Isaac just started. So, these are microscopic, and that's very nice that you're interested to learning about nematodes. And as you see on, do we have a mouse? Here, a mouse. The top one, right there. Okay, thank you. Perfect. The top slide is the root knot nematode. This is the J2 stage under the microscope, magnified about 60 times. And here, these are reniform nematodes under our dissecting scope, magnified about 30 times. And you can see we have quite a large population that we work with sometimes. But these are obligate parasites. So these nematodes require a live plant to live on. They require that live plant to live on to complete their life cycle. So without that host, they will die. The only problem is they do have a very broad host range. And of all the possible nematodes, this is one of those discussions between entomologists and nematologists, is who has the most species. So ours are microscopic, you don't see them all. But we do have a large number of species of nematodes. But these are the major players. The reniform nematode, as Dr. Isaac just showed you. The root knot nematode is our Meloidogyne species. We have lots of species of root knot nematodes, so it does cover a lot of different hosts. We see some more of the lesions show up on our corn type of monocot crops. The sting shows up. This is a great nematode in very sandy soil. So that one's usually showing up when you have 95% sands. And the lance nematode is well known in South Carolina for causing a lot of damage. So these are just a few of the major players. Our nematicides work pretty well on all of them. So these are just some of those that you may be running into. They all have the same basic life cycle, just following very similarly as an insect. From egg, going through development, it will molt inside the egg, shedding its skin just like an insect, to forming the second stage, which typically hatches at the second stage. And this is where our nematodes change. Some of our second stage are the infective stage, like with our root knot. So they have to feed on a plant or they're going to die. Not the reniform, though. It's going to go ahead and molt, shed its skin to the third stage, moving on to the fourth stage, and then forming males and females. It does all of that and never feeds. So the reniform goes through all stages until it forms those males and females, and then only the female enters the root. So what does it look like? These are some of my favorite fields. But root knot nematode has irregular areas within the field. This is on soybean. You see that wave effect as the plants are stunted. Here's a nice cotton field where we have very tiny plants stunting compared to larger ones, and you just see an up and down wave effect of his foliage as you look at them. Later in the season, you're going to have excessive weeds here because the canopy never closed. And if you dig up those roots, you should see galls. And this is one of our cotton plants with nice galls all over the root system. Very characteristic of the root knot nematode. You put it under the microscope, you can tell as those galls form, they often kill that apical meristem of the root, and that root stops growing. So that's very common with our root knot nematodes. Threshold levels, when you put a group of nematologists together, they're never going to agree. So it depends on your state, and check with them there. This is what Alabama has up online. So for our second stage is the one we find in the soil, and if we have 10 of them, we think that's threshold, although I have my favorite field I work in that I usually find one in my sample each year, and I will have hundreds or thousands by the end of the year. And notice the fall threshold at the end of the season. I'll show you more charts on that. Fall samples are higher numbers than spring samples. This is our reniform nematode, which is our common problem as well. Again, uneven plant heights. And typically why we see these is when they're producing lower yields year after year with no good reason. And again, the weeds will come in. Now, in Alabama, we have this interveinal chlorosis that I've seen. Now, I worked with cotton in Mississippi and in Louisiana. We never saw that in those soils. But in the Alabama soils, we do see this interveinal chlorosis that shows up. It's a nutrient deficiency that's brought on with the nematode, so it's very common in our area. I have a yield slide I popped in here too so you could see in our field. So you can see the yield differences when this cotton is ready to be picked due to the nematodes. So you can see some dramatic yield losses. Now when you dig these roots up, it's much more difficult to see this nematode. But here on the top, the nematode, and for us, it is the first and second week of June. You dig up those roots very gently. You wash them. You can see the soil particles attached to the reniform nematode. When you wash her very gently, you can see the nematode. The anterior portion is in the root. The posterior portion is on the outside. She begins laying eggs and sort of soil particles just attached to her. So for us, it's that first and second week of June. You can dig up those roots very gently, dust off the soil, and you can see those nematodes. And these are nice, beautiful pictures just so you can see them. Hatch out is a J2, but these, the reniform, we have males and we have females. And can you see that outer cuticle? They do typically have more protection because of those cuticles on the outside of their body. And this is a female with her anterior portion of her head embedded, posterior portion, and you notice she's already laying eggs. Now, the only way you're going to know if you have a nematode problem is to take a soil sample. So run through the field, taking with a soil probe, zigzag pattern randomly, but look for the areas where you know you have problems. Send them into your state lab, but there's lots of labs, and find out what nematodes you have and what levels. And then I love all these programs we have nowadays where you can grid your field and then put in your numbers and put the color coding to it to where you see where your high numbers are versus your low numbers. There's some really great work that can be done where you can overlay your yields with your populations. Now, the one thing is these numbers on the yields are going to move. So they don't stay exactly, and they change by their food source. So it'll be changing from year to year. And these are nematode populations. These are living organisms that have to live on a living plant. So when we're planting in the springtime, populations are low. You put that food source in there, and they start to expand. And they're laying eggs every 21 to 60 days. So we're going from 1 to 200 to 500 very quickly. They expand rapidly. Our crop, maximum stage, we usually have maximum growth of the plant. We have maximum population of our nematode. We harvest our plants. And then in our area, we lose about 70% of that population over the winter. So generally from our test plots, that's how much we lose. Others vary depending. And for reniform, it's even a bigger idea of what is our threshold. So as I look on the online over the state, fall thresholds are typically higher than spring. Others say by crop history and soil type. So check with your labs to see what they think your thresholds are. That's the best option. And I added this from a graduate student from many years ago. We looked at, I think there were 6 soil types that are common in Alabama, from the silty loams all the way to the very fine sandy loams. We have reniform in this green one, and the populations tend to never get over 10,000 per pint of soil. Although some of our highest yield losses are in a silt loam, and you see the populations here are much higher. We do not have reniform right now in this clay, in the black clays in the Black Belt region, but boy, that nematode sure did like that soil. So the potential populations boom can be tremendous depending on your soil type. Okay, so for some trials, and I'll show you some damage that they can do. In our Tennessee Valley Research Station, which is right up here, this is the heart of some of our cotton production in our state. And the farmers in the area all have reniform, but we did not have it on the station. So I was able to get the station to allow me to inoculate this field with reniform. We started this in 2007. The field right next to it, which is just a little road, same soil type, same irrigation as it goes through, we did not add reniform. So I try to compare what we do, our cotton does in the reniform field versus no reniform. We started our inoculation in 2007. Looking at varieties between the two fields, by 2010, we were starting to see a 35% decline in yield with the reniform. So I tried, we worked very hard as a group, inoculating evenly, and that's how long it took, 3 years, but we saw a 35% decline. In 11, we had a tornado came through, and we didn't plant until July, so there was no nematode damage. But then it started coming back the next year. And then by 13, which is 5, 6 years later, we're starting to see a 60 to 40% reduction every year between the varieties in those two fields. So the take-home message here is, again, with sanitation. This is a soil-borne organism. If you have a field with nematodes, it's always best to plant your no-nematode clean fields first and then go into your nematode fields. We have kept this nematode in that field on the station, but we work in the clean fields, and then we go to the nematode fields, and then we go to the tractor shed with a pressure washer and just wash the soil off.
I ought to be on tour or something like that. Check, 1, 2, 3,
pardon?
Hey, welcome, 1, 2, 1, 2, microphone, one more in the monitor, more in the monitor.
So we
one,
just
two,
wash
one,
it
two,
off
one,
with a pressure
two.
Washer.
Yep, 1, 2, microphone, 1, 2, 3,
field.
Nothing
That's
coming out of the monitors.
So
hey, I'm going to fire these people.
But you can tell from
one,
those
two.
Yield losses, if you have clean fields,
give me somebody over there and
do
quack
not
it up.
Bring
whang,
this nematode
whang.
In. Soil particles
1, 2,
on the
nothing coming out of the monitor. Send
it.
Some to the wedges. 1, 2, 1, 2. There you go. Bring a little more up. 1, 2,
with
2, 2, 2.
I have variety trials that we've done for 4 years. And when Vellum Total first came out, that was our first nematicide after we lost our Aldicarb. We were hopeful that we could make up this yield loss with the application of a nematicide. These are our varieties. We work with our extension and the growers in the area and figure out the varieties that are very commonly grown in our area, and we try to get some from every company and similar. And here we added the Vellum Total, where orange bars had no nematicide, blue bars had nematicide. We counted the nematode numbers. The window for us is 30 to 45 days. And you could tell from the very first year, we had a 67% reduction in nematode numbers. I was quite excited. But when we came to yields, the green bars are our field without nematodes, and those are the yields of all the varieties when there weren't any nematodes present. The orange bar is the yield of the varieties without a nematicide, and then the blue bar is where we added the Vellum Total. So we only increased our yields 6% with our Vellum Total. We didn't make up all that difference as if we had not had the nematode. So we did it again in 16. And this time it was an in-furrow spray. We redid our equipment on the tractor, and you can tell with blue bars, we reduced reniform populations 90%. So I was hoping for better yields. We came back with our yields. We increased our yields somewhat. So we only lost 30% when we used Vellum Total, but we lost 64% without it. So we're not bringing it up to the level if we did not have a nematode. So we went back the next year, and we've expanded. Again, with all these changed varieties for the next time, and we have with and without, and we had a reduction of nematode populations. This was a great spring. We had lots of very high populations of reniform. When we have high moisture, we have high nematode populations, and we reduced those numbers 92%. But when it came to the yields, we also took our Vellum Total here and put it in the non-nematode field. So if you use the Vellum Total, do you get any benefit if there's no nematode? 2% increase in yield without nematode across all the varieties. But this year, with that 92% reduction, we got a 48% in yield in the reniform field. That's our best so far. It did not bring it up to what it was without nematodes, but we did increase our yields. We thought we'd repeat this in 2018 and publish this. We could not plant. It was late planting. We had so much moisture, and as soon as we planted, the rain was gone. And, of course, unfortunately, our irrigation was broke on the station for a month, so we didn't get any moisture. So we only reduced our nematode populations 32%, but our populations were a third of what they had been the last year. So, again, when we looked at yields, we saw only a 6% increase in our yield without nematodes, and then a 6% increase when we had nematodes. So we did have a little bit, but not much, but our nematode populations were much less in 18 than they were 17. So we get a lot of variability. That's what I wanted you to see. But this is what you can see. One of each companies, where we use the nematicide, does it look more uniform? Where we did not use the nematicide, 4-row plots, two without, you can see the uniformity. The plant growth is better. A different company, again, plant growth is better where you add the nematicide, and you see that uneven wave effect where we did not. And one more, all the different companies. So you can see the nematicide did increase our biomass. The plant looks better compared to no nematicide. But then we put together 4 years so you could see the variability that even us working in the same field with the same folks with 4 years of data, We reduced nematodes 70%, but that range was 32 to 92%, depending on the environmental conditions. We increased yield an average over those 4 years of only 18%, which 18 is good, but that was from a low of 4 to 48%. So some years they're really going to benefit, and other years you may not get it, depending on that environmental conditions with weather. That was a yield increase of an average of 577 pounds per acre, but it ranged from 152 to 1336. So some years it's going to pay off really well, but environmental conditions are going to make a tremendous effect. Okay, then I have a few nematicide tests to share. Our National Cotton Council very kindly gets together and gives us some funding, and we all get together as a group and come up with standard nematicides to test over the whole beltwide to give us some idea of some nematicide effects. And this is the list we put together in 17 and 18, looking at our seed treatments versus in-furrow sprays, various combinations with seed treatments and in-furrow sprays, and that AgLogic, which is available in Georgia, and I don't know how much farther, but I was able to also get it in Alabama. 2 years with the data, I put it all together in one slide. This is root knot and reniform fields. The bars are our yields. The orange line are the nematode numbers. So you can see that within our, this is our controller, our gaucho. Nematode numbers are very nicely reduced by most of our nematicides, 77% over all of them. But we had overall nematicides a 413 pound per acre increase in yield. You can look at the difference if you prefer the in-furrow sprays versus some of the seed treatments, and then also to the AgLogic. I also ask our Alabama Cotton Commission for funding, and they do fund that I can take whatever nematicides and put it together in our Alabama slides, plots, and let them look at the results of what we can do and totally independently. And here again, we're looking at our gaucho, the vellum, at a 14-ounce. We also took the vellum and then added a spray later, the propulse over the top at like Pinhead Square to try to control nematodes. We have our AgLogic and the vellum and the Vitate spray, which is that same pattern. And we used our seed treatments, the old Evicta, the Copio, and the Biostat. And again, the bars are our yields, while the line is our nematode numbers. And here we did not quite reduce nematode numbers as well, but the seed treatments did. And you can see the yield increase, which is an average of 512 pounds per acre. And you can decide what's best for you as a seed treatment or if you like the in-furrow sprays. But this also does give us an ideal option of using that foliar spray. The one option with this foliar spray at Pinhead Square is in our area, those plants have to be actively growing, which means it must be been irrigated or watered to actually give us some response. That's the way we've seen it. Then we have a lot of tests that we've done, and I'll just show a few of these, with sponsored by the companies, and this is one we've done for Bayer, very similar in the treatments that you see at the bottom with the Biostat and the Evictas and the Copios and combinations. And you see even with our test plots, they'll have wide variations of nematode numbers. But with this, looking at the best treatment was is AgLogic, is our old Aldicarb, gave us a 954 pound increase, which did very well in this test. But truly, with all our options and nematicides, a cotton variety is your most important decision, because with this one, we're looking at a Stoneville 4946 versus a Deltapline 1646, and our standard test of the nematicides we have at the bottom. And you can see our nematode numbers are reduced by both sides, but look at the yield response versus one variety versus the other. So a little tolerance or a very high-yielding potential variety gave us a much better yield response to our nematicides than one that did not. So cotton variety is still very much an important decision. Okay, there are lots of new things coming to the market, and I don't know when these will come out or if they will, but Corteva, which was our DuPont, has a Q product that we've looked at for years that looks good. They took it to market on vegetables. Now they say they may bring it to the cotton industry, but Q was placed at a low rate, a high rate, and then at plant and a foliar spray, and then again with Vitate and a high rate with Vitate and Vitate alone in a control. We were very excited about this. The high rate increased yield 744 pounds per acre. The low was 346. We had a good nematode population. And I don't know if this will be out. Who knows? But it was in, they took it to vegetables, so I'm hoping it'll come to cotton. This is one of the pictures we took. from the high rate of Q, so you can see the biomass versus the control. Also, the nematode numbers, reniform was down at 5,000 versus 16,000 in the untreated control. So it looked very good. I don't know if it's coming. I get a lot of questions about Nemastrike from Monsanto, and Monsanto is now Bayer. But all I ever have from them is number trials. So I just lumped everything together versus the control versus all their numbered products, which I don't know what they are for sure. We saw a different numerical increase. But I don't know anything about Nemastrike. Most of us have not been given it, so I can't tell you anything there. I'm sorry. Valent has an Aveno they're coming out with. Same thing. I have a control versus a low rate and a high rate. We did see increases in yield. I don't know how soon that one may come to market, but it's nice that everybody's looking and there's a potential there. And then we did a lot of work for Indigo this year. Everybody's heard of this name. This was a challenge. There's a lot of biologicals. I have no idea what they are. We did two trials with them. They are numbers. These are just our yields in our test plot. This was root knot field. 50 biologicals in a field trial was a lot of samples. So they're looking at large numbers. I don't know when anything will come out, but they're definitely looking for some effects. But with all those nematicides and options, if your reniform or your root knot populations are high, the best option is to rotate. That is the best. Crop rotation is the best management tool. So I found this online from South Carolina. And it depends on your nematode. Cotton, it's a great host for our southern root knot, but not for peanut root knot. So that's a good rotation. Great host for reniform, but not soybean cysts. So that's a good rotation. It is a good host for sting and lesion and lance, though. You notice with our soybean, it's a host for everything. So, but in the good news, it's a host for reniform, but reniform does not necessarily prefer soybean over cotton. So even when I swap the reniform from cotton to soybean, those populations don't increase when it's on soybean like they do with cotton. Corn is a host for both of your root knots, but it's not a host for reniform or soybean cysts, so that's a good change. Peanut is a great one if you've got the sandy soils. It's not for southern root knot, just arenaria. But it's not a host for reniform or soybean cysts or lance. So those are good rotations if you have those options. But I must caution here. We've had this problem in our reniform field. If you put in your corn, it's not a host. It'll drop your populations, but not if the field looks like this. Weeds are great hosts for all of our nematodes. So if you've got this weed population, your reniform numbers are not going to drop. Sorry. But from the rotation, we did this work back with Gazaway many years ago. If you added a nematicide, and in here we had continuous cotton and white, corn rotated for 1 year, for 2 years, and for 3 years, peanut the same thing, 1, 2, and 3, and soybean 1, 2, and 3. Did we add a nematicide or didn't add a nematicide? And these were our reniform numbers at harvest. So you notice how high the nematode numbers can get. But if you have had it in a different crop for 1, 2, or 3 years and come back to cotton, that population rebounds, but it takes a while. So 2 years is helpful. I mean, 1 year is good. 2 years is much better. 3 years is even better. But I know that depends on economics. And whether it's cotton or peanuts or soybeans, you see that same effect. And it's there with yield as well. So you can see that stair-step increase in yield the more long time you've been off to an alternate crop. But if you add a nematicide, it's not quite as dramatic. But without it, you definitely see the effect. So rotation is the best option if your numbers of nematodes are really high. This is another one we did with one of the graduate students just finished recently. And we noticed this thing. So this is in our root knot field. Root knot's been in this field with fusarium wilt for 50 years at least. So this area of the field has been in cotton for 20 years. We split it off and grew corn tests in this area and soybean tests in this area for 2 years. So we fed our nematodes corn or cotton or soybean. Then we collected those nematodes and in the greenhouse, I wanted to show, if that root knot had been on cotton for 2 years and we gave it back to cotton, we put 5,000 nematodes in a pot, you're going to get 8.7 times more. That was like 43,000 nematodes in 30 days. But when we put it and fed those nematodes corn in the greenhouse, that population did not quite double. So we did not get 10,000. And when you went to soybean, it just barely doubled. So changing the crop, even though it's a susceptible crop, suppresses that nematode population. It does not increase to the levels it would if you kept it on that same food source. Same thing happened when it was been on corn. You see, four times the number, and just over half if you change it to cotton or soybean. Or if that root knot's been kneeling on soybean, change it to corn or to cotton, and the populations do not increase as much. So this can be a very good management tool. Even though it's a susceptible crop, it'll keep those populations lower than what they will be if you're just continuous. Cover crops, we've looked at a lot of them. They will not solve your nematode problem, but they will help. So this is that level of nematode numbers when we put them on the cover crops. Lots of different cover crops. Most of them are not host. A few clovers will increase your numbers. A few, but not many. So you're going to watch that. But when we did do these, you can see we did have big biomasses out there too. And if you put your cotton back, we'll have high numbers with the cover crops. They keep them a little lower, but they're not going to suppress them all season. But that did help. But we do, biomass was important, and we do sometimes have dry falls. It's hard to get them established. And one of the other things we noticed is with our nematodes, we increase those natural pathogens in the soil as you increase that organic matter in your soil. So we seem to help those natural pathogens come in and help reduce populations. So with this, I'll come up to the summary. There seem to be a lot of companies interested in nematicides. I just put a list of everything together that we've talked with the last 2 years. So the different companies, their products, biologicals, seem to be really on the market, and applications from seed treatments to pre-plants to in-furrow sprays, and more of them. So there's quite a list of different companies that are looking at them. And then I even added for you some new names that have contacted me, and these are just ones that have contacted me. I have no idea how many more may be out there. So these are new names I had not heard before that are all coming to us with biologicals to see if we can help them. And you notice they're all across the country. So there is a very definite an interest in finding new nematicides, which is exciting for us. So with this, I wanted to thank and let you know all this research was done by a lot of folks on the research stations across our state, a number of graduate students as well as undergraduates, and even a retired nematologist that helps us work out. So I hope your cotton looks like this next year. And if there's any way we can help, just email me and let me know. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We got just a second for questions, if anybody's got Dr. Lawrence a question.
We're good?
Good job.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.